You're listening to Tour Punisher, the podcast about being punished on tour. Today's conversation is with Jared Mees, Portland musician, co-founder of Tender Loving Empire record label. They have a great store here in Portland and one at the airport. For more information on Jared Mees, go to his website, jaredmees.pizza, and check out tenderlovingempire.com. Not .pizza on that last one. Anyway, here is the show. Enjoy.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I was just thinking about what we were talking about before Mike were on.
And
in Alaska.
The baby talk.
Well, not baby talk.
Kid talk.
Before we got on Kid Mike, Rock. We were like,
we're like, oh, the little one.
Oh, he's so cute.
Oh, I love my cute baby so much. I also hate my daughter.
Like this the whole time.
I was remembering, this is how like weird Alaska is to grow up in. We had, so that you can drink or drive, there's a product they sell, which was a magnetic 7-Up label that would go on your beer can. Like it would go floop, and it would like stick on there so you could be like going on the road and like cheers to a cop or whatever who's going by you. So anyway.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Alaska's crazy.
Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Can you guys carry beers around in Alaska?
I mean,
probably not legally, but who gives a shit?
Yeah.
If you get, they'll shoot you if you get caught, though. Yeah. The police. Well, they'll just shoot you for no reason.
Well, or if they don't shoot you, like somebody with a gun, because everybody has guns there, will try to shoot the beer can out of your hand as a target practice. Walking in the street. Ping! Oh, fuck, come on, man.
Montana. Good shot, though.
Montana, you can have the passenger can have one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, actually, I think I researched that the last time I went through Montana.
That's what everybody thinks. That
yeah,
goes
yeah, yeah. Like, oh, a no. friend told me that. They were like, you can drink in the car, just the driver can't. I'm like, really? Oh, cool. And then I looked at it, and I was like, oh, that got over. Turned like 20 years ago, but people I think still are just like, fuck it. We're in Montana.
What about this for an idea? It's a website that's for touring people, and I just keep an updated list of all of the current beer laws of every state in the United States.
That should like be,
because sometimes you might fuck up and you're like, oh, I thought this was cool. It's like, no, you crossed the line.
Probably
now you're not allowed to have beer.
Weed laws to that as well.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
We have fluctuating weed
dry
laws.
Fucked up you can get per state.
And dry counties to avoid.
Dry counties.
Big X's through them.
Sometimes if you're seen with a beer on Sunday, they like send you to
that's
hell.
Like that's like should be the beginning of our blog/website, considering we don't have a blog/website.
I'll start an email newsletter.
There you go.
I feel like email newsletters are back, whereas like blogs, I don't know who has a blog anymore.
Apparently
it's out of cycle right now.
But apparently a blog, the only reason to actually keep it going these days if you have a business is that it helps out your search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And
well,
welcome to the show.
Let's talk about accounting.
I mean, it's actually not a terrible segue considering we're talking to Jared Mees, and you know, you own at least one business that I know of. You might have more businesses than that you own.
I have one active, successful business.
Yeah,
I have many. I have other defunct, unsuccessful businesses.
Let's talk about those first.
Yeah. Let's hear some defunct ones.
You want to hear? I was part of a little startup called Generous, which was a pay what you want e-commerce engine.
Oh, okay.
And we're really excited about supporting charities and allowing people to pay what you want. And we made this little thing where you could slide the slider up and down. And the dollar amount would change, and we had Russell Brand using it, and it was all happening, but we just couldn't make it, couldn't get it over the hump, and kind of had to give up on it.
So it was
it was cool though.
So it was kind of like a Patreon kind of thing.
It was it's similar to Patreon, except it just the business model, I think in the end we weren't able to actually get to this like user rate where we actually made enough money, Patreon, Kickstarter, and all those have done really well by actually making money. Which who would have thunk that you have to make money to make your business work? But it turns out
the fuck?
Bullshit.
It turns out that I remember the day that I discovered that with Tender Loving Empire. And it was a sad day. It was a sad day. It was like, oh, we're running out of money, and we have to do something different. If we don't start making money, we have to get different jobs.
Is this
and it was like explaining it to a 10-year-old when my wife was explaining this to me. And it was like, oh, we have to. We weren't running a business. We were just like
we were just burning through cash.
She was like, fun. Yeah. She was like, no, no good business, no good money happen here. And you're like, yeah. But I, no, no, no.
No, business go bye-bye. Business go bye-bye.
So it was, what, when was that? That's like circa...
It's like what? 2009, 10. Okay. We'd had it for like 2 years. I mean, we were selling stuff and like we were, you know, making money and we, there was all sorts of artists and things were like moving and there was lots of success. But yeah. Just like the monetary success was very thin.
Yeah.
So we had to like actually, we had a, it's actually a pivotal moment for me where I realized like if I want to keep doing this for people, I have to take it, like, actually take the business part of it seriously or completely change.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
How I do it. So.
Okay, go ahead, Ryan.
I was just going to point out there's this perception, and I think it's the same perception when you're in a band that's a tiny bit starting to get famous or whatever it's happening, is that, like, people know about you and then they perceive, well, I know about that band and my friend knows about that band and a lot of people know about that band, so that must mean that they're rich.
Yeah.
Right. And nothing could be further from the truth. No. And the distance until you, if you ever do, is another 5 to 7 years.
Totally.
Of like whatever you might, maybe, if you get lucky and smart.
Yeah, and if you have like 2 members.
Right. The key, that's why, but yeah, those 2 members, the Black Keyses of the world, yeah. It's so brilliant. And those like the, I don't know, the Typhoons of the world, you're like, man, so how dumb. Do you, yeah. I, those kids, I'm just like, I mean, they're amazing, so fucking...
No, I mean, I love them, and they'll even tell you, like, man, why do we have this many people in the band?
Right.
Because it's awesome. Yeah. Because it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Because it, like, crushes you every time you see it, and you're just like, that was the most amazing experience. Yeah. And if there was 2 of them, it would have not been that cool.
Just Ty.
Yeah. Yeah. Just
sorry,
just
that's like, a terrible joke.
What, Ty? What? I thought you were talking about Tyler.
No, it's just like, yeah. Just Ty.
Just Ty.
They're just called Ty.
Ty. It's Ty and Ty.
Wait, I'm not... Oh, Typhoon. Okay, got it.
The joke was so bad.
It was so bad. It took a little bit. I was like, what the fuck is this joke?
If it was an airplane, it would have just kind of like crashed off the end of the runway.
Yeah.
That joke.
One skid.
Yeah.
Skid it on me. That's good.
Sorry.
Well, Jared, thanks for being on the show. Welcome to the show. This is kind of...
Thank
we've
you.
We've already begun.
I'm so excited.
Are you familiar... with the like what we talk about, or do you need a briefing at all?
You know, I am familiar, but I feel like listeners could use a briefing.
Sure, sure, yeah.
Listeners certainly. Is this going to switch into a thing where you're interview, you like yeah. Take over?
What are you guys really trying to do with this show?
It's a pretty high concept show, so we might need to explain it.
Yeah. So it's welcome to Tour Punisher, the show about being punished on tour. We're here today with Jared Mies, part owner of Tender Loving Empire. I assume Jared Mies and Grown Up Children are still in existence, or are you guys, is
I'm
it
just
like
doing a solo these days?
You're just doing a solo these
but
days,
but we're still touring and running around, just not as near as wild of fashion.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Mostly in like very cush environs.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Seldom.
Yeah, where you can get like get that nice bed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I tour in a very different way.
Yeah, totally.
I once did.
Are there any other projects that I am not mentioning that are worth mentioning right now?
I'm starting a band with my 7-year-old kid that is top secret. So that's all I can say about it.
Okay, so stay tuned. Maybe we'll get more of that later on once we get Jared good and liquored up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I might sing you part of an acapella, and you'll have to cut it later.
Did you bring your NDAs with you?
Did you bring your NDAs? That's the question.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you on the show. This is like kind of a first for us.
I'm
in
so
the sense.
Excited.
Yeah, like we're trying to switch things up a little bit this season too, because we know you've done a lot of touring and we've mostly been interviewing touring musicians, but we had our first stand-up comedian on the other day, which
awesome.
Was fun, and then we thought that you would be a great guest because you're also like a first of somebody who has actually like, you know, owned a label and been on that side of things.
Yeah.
So not just the artist side, but also the, you know, like we were talking about, the business side.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it all.
Yeah. Well, so hopping in a little bit here with like history. So I'm really interested in kind of how Tender Loving Empire came to be. You know, like was it music first for you, where you were playing and touring and you were noticing the bands that you were connected to here in Portland, and it was just kind of like a natural leap to start a label? Or was it kind of a, like a chicken, what was the chicken and egg kind of situation in there?
Yeah, you know, the whole thing was just very, not very thought through, to be honest. It was, we're really excited about all of our art friends, artistic friends. I went to art school and met a bunch of people that were making art. We would go to shows all the time in LA when we were living there. And this was like 2004, 2005, and it was just constantly being surrounded by artists. And also, we were all like very, you know, pretty young, and so nobody was super successful, and everybody just was, there was a lot of energy, but not a lot of like cohesion. And the scene out in LA was really disappointing to me, because everybody seemed to just be in it for themselves, and there wasn't a whole lot of camaraderie. And when I moved up here, immediately it was just like, this is a different world. Like, everyone seemed to be like caring about each other's art almost as much as they were caring about their own. And so it just really appealed to me to just be to embrace like every artist I met, and being able to provide something for them was the goal. We wanted to be able to provide some sort of outlet, and you know, a record label is a way to do that, a website is a way to do that, and you know, a physical store seemed like a way to do that as well. So we started all of them pretty much simultaneously.
Okay.
Within months of each other. We were basically just excited about people's art, and it never really was like a high bar. It was more like, are you making art like seriously, and you want to show it to people, and you not have a good way to get it out there? We can be that way.
Totally. Yeah, great. Yeah, because now you have your flagship. Well, I guess it wouldn't be your flagship store, or is it your flagship store on almost Burnside, right?
Yeah, 10th and Stark is our flagship store.
And now you got a store in the airport.
Yeah, and we opened one in the airport. The airport wanted us to have a store there, which was like really exciting.
Yeah, it's cool.
You know, they were like, "Well, Sub Pop, they have that Sub Pop store in Seattle.
We have to have something."
And it was like, "Oh, you asked us, and you compare us to Sub Pop?" They're all constantly doing that, and I don't think they understand what Sub Pop really is.
Yeah.
It's like this massive label.
Wait, the airport asked you to open a store at the airport?
Yeah, they have a Tender Loving Empire has a.
Yeah,
has
no,
a
store. I saw that. I didn't know that. That's how that worked, though. They're like, "We need to get you in here."
It doesn't normally, but there's every once in a while they're able to like approach businesses.
That's lucky. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a very difficult process, but totally worth it.
Yeah,
I like coming home and seeing a local Portland business at the airport instead of like Sparrow or whatever.
Oh yeah. Our airport is so great. It's ironic that I'll never have a layover there. You know what I mean? I'm just like, I've never really spend time in the airport unless
Portland
I get there
early. Is the best.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I just hang out there sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
No. You can just go through security just so you can out at Country Cat.
All the cool
Cat.
Shit is in the gate area, so yeah.
Yeah, that's it's only going to get cooler too. I mean, they're adding tons of work that's happening right now.
Yeah, totally.
A whole e-concourse is getting added currently. It's going to be like the biggest concourse. We're probably off topic talking about concourses.
No, I don't know. I mean, we could segue really easily into travel right now.
Okay, great. Good. Y'all,
what's your worst airport experience?
Oh, God. We like missed a flight in Barcelona. I had to just sleep on the floor in Barcelona. I also missed a flight in Verona in Italy, and we had to sleep outside. It was right after 9/11, and they wouldn't let us sleep in the airport. It was like,
oh god,
it was like 3 weeks after 9/11, and we slept outside in the middle of it was January.
Oh god.
It sucked. I've never been that cold in my life. I was not on tour. I was just like with a friend
outside, just like outside the building.
Yeah, outside the building. We were like in the doorway.
Fuck, man.
Yeah. And we were also like dumb. We should have taken a taxi and gone to a hotel or something.
It's funny.
We're just like, I guess we stay here.
I think there's a thing that you, when you're in your 20s,
I was like 20.
Yeah. And you're like, the options, there's no options for me. So all I have to do is sit here. And then when you turn 30, maybe you realize, hey, I could. I could maybe do something else.
Yeah, I could rent a car.
There's been so many instances where I'm like, shit, what am I going to do? Well, here's the worst hotel ever. I guess I'll just stay here. As opposed to like, maybe I could look for something else or no, this is just what we're doing. Okay.
Yeah, no, this is what the guy said. And so we're going to stay right here. that's how it ended up working, which I guess is why we tour. I now tour in like style. I try to have some style when we tour, where before it was just like,
yeah,
anything goes, and like wherever we end up is how it works. You know,
I think you do that for a while, and then you grind yourself down into oblivion and realize like, oh, this isn't sustainable.
Yeah,
and it's not about, I think people who are starting out think like, hey, these fucking guys are staying at a hotel and not under this dumpster, and what the fuck is with them? Yeah. And I'm like, well, it's making it so I could survive this and not be dead when I get home or whatever.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's just like, I also realized it was just like, anybody who's got shit to talk on me must really like me, because they had to find out about me to begin with, because I'm like nobody, you know? It's like,
yeah,
they're secretly my biggest fan. They're talking shit on me.
Yeah, really. You know? So comparing the way that you used to tour, right, and how you try to do it now, what's like the big takeaway on like, oh my God, I could never go back. Like this, like I have to have this thing. I could never not have this thing anymore.
Well, the main thing is I like to wear a robe and nothing else.
And on the bus,
just in as often as I can on tour, and so it's like
nothing else underneath the robe.
Sure. Yeah.
Freely.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Free flow.
As often as one can, you know, not like being weird about it, but it's like, it's difficult to feel comfortable doing that in like, you know, some random person's house that you met after the show, you know? So like,
this,
it's really more like, how can we all like do yoga and like smoke weed and like hang out with in our robes and enjoy ourselves, like what type of place would that is going to supply that,
right?
Also, I have to say, it's like when you stop trying to make money off of your art, then you make totally different decisions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
It's not like we're not trying to make money, but it's like you're stop trying to make your money, your art earn your living.
Yeah.
Right.
I recently read that book, Big Magic, by Elizabeth Gilbert, and she has this whole section about like making your art make your living for you, and how like that's such a difficult thing to do to your creativity.
Yes.
And I feel like you guys probably have tons of insight into this, but like my creative process is so much more like robust and satisfying since I stopped trying to make it my means of earning my living.
Totally.
Yeah. And then if you're caught getting a nice hotel, like some guy jumps out of a dumpster, it's like, sell out. You're like, it was one night.
Wearing a Builders and Butchers.
Yeah. Fucking, I followed you here.
The fucking Marriott.
I thought you guys were crashing in here with me. Fucking assholes. Do you have
staying in the hotel part?
Yeah.
Do you have a...
This Marriott dumpster's pretty nice.
I usually sneak in for the breakfast until they kick me out.
Yeah, sure.
Covered in trash. What is there any stories from those early days of touring that you can think of where like a horrible place that you stayed or like an unexpectedly bad situation you were in? Does anything come to mind? Or did you block those?
Yeah, you know, there's definitely like tons of them. We stayed at this place called Tree's Farm. And it was this guy named Tree. And it's like on the overlooking, it was overlooking Kentucky, but it was in Ohio. And
Tree's looking at Ohio.
Yeah. And
or
it was built. Yeah. It was built to built to us as this like amazing Halloween party. And we were playing it, and it was just like so much energy was behind it. And there was a poster, and it was just like so like it was awesome, but it was also really disappointing because we just didn't understand what like a Kentucky, like Ohio, like
down
would be like.
It's different.
It's very different.
Not a lot of robes there.
No, not a lot of robes.
More like, overall scene.
It was
and they sleep in the overalls.
It ended up just being sleeping on the like to cut to the shitty part is like sleeping on the floor at like 4 a.m. with just like lots of like dirty drugs happening around you, and watching like a dog like pee like on the ground, on the carpet, like right next to your face. And like the person looking up and the person who like owns the house, like Tree, is like looking at the dog and just kind of like keeps drinking and like keeps going
and doing nothing
and doing nothing, like it just happens all the time and you're sleeping on it or in it and
just next
and,
to it.
And they kept yelling, though. They just like loved me and they kept yelling, "You're saving the community, Jared," from the PA, and I wasn't even around. I just would hear someone saying that I was saving the community. It was like very lots of like dirty drugs and crazy experience. It was also Halloween, so you have like everyone dressed up.
Yeah,
and,
There's like such a weird expectation for adult Halloween.
Yeah,
you know, Halloween is like has that expectation of like something crazy is gonna happen tonight, and if it doesn't happen to me, I'm gonna make it happen.
Yeah, yeah. Something crazy like, has to happen tonight. Yeah. That's his expectation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird.
The best part though, there was a band called Burnt Grass, and they were an awful bluegrass band, and they would end every song. They were dressed up like the Chipmunks, and they were all three like the exact size of the Chipmunks, and they end every song and be like, "Burnt grass."
No,
yeah.
No.
That's
hilarious. You guys need to do that, Ryan.
Yeah, every song has your own name at the end of it.
That's like the same thing as like a pop punk band starting every song with a pick slide.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, enough of the pics. Do it once.
Yeah,
it's cool once.
Yeah, I mean,
it's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. I would do it more than once.
You guys should do more of that too.
Guilty. High school band. I was guilty.
You just slide this shit up across that.
I had a bass, and I would just do bass slides.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, yes.
It sounded awful.
You see an attractive person. A bass works so well for that.
God. So no, I wasn't good enough at it.
No one's ever done that.
I do that every day.
You've done that.
I do it every single day to start my morning. Just get up.
They do it on the E string though.
Your wife is like, "Who are you doing that for?"
Yeah, what
are
you doing?
It's for me.
I do it in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah.
For myself.
What was your high school band's name?
I had a couple of them. Some Might Say was the first band.
Oh, nice. That's one of those, like, yeah.
Some Might Say, yeah. And then Nickel Trick.
Nickel Trick.
Nickel Trick. And then my senior year, we had a band called Blazar. And none of us smoked weed, and we didn't really get the weed reference.
That's amazing.
You just thought, yeah, Blazar, that's cool.
Which turns out is like the most dangerous thing in the universe. I wish we'd known that.
Oh, really?
Blazar.
What is that? I don't even know what that is.
It's like a
I've smoked weed.
It's like a neutron star that shoots out like this like really wide beam that can just like destroy whole solar systems. And if it one is pointing, if a blazar is pointing at us, then we're done. Oh, I think a blazar is
it's like radiation, right?
But it's not.
The definition of a blazar is that it is pointed at us.
Is it a black hole laser? Because that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's basically
blazar.
Blazar, yeah. And there's a quasar.
But it is a weed reference, or it isn't a weed reference.
No, but it's got the word blaze in it.
Yeah,
it would have been so cool.
Oh, so you guys were being like nerds about it.
We were
like,
Christians.
This is crazy.
We're like Christian.
Yeah.
All my bands were Christian bands, and I was like all into Christian punk rock, and and I did the whole like. Yeah, the whole youth group thing.
My first
tour was actually with Blazar, and we toured youth groups on our way to Cornerstone Music Festival.
Whoa.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's like the really big one, right?
Yeah. And we broke down halfway through, though, and we had raised like all this money from these churches. And then we would just like, we went and we broke down and we spent some of it on the engine, and then we just spent the rest on fireworks. and I felt, it was like, this is the money from the church. We're just like all going to just spend it on fireworks.
And these are fireworks for Jesus.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. It was for the Lord still, right?
It was, I mean, we set them up in the in the cemetery, as I recall. It was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it kind of sounds like you guys are going to hell.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it was. We really were not concerned with like, we weren't thinking much beyond like, oh, we get fireworks now.
Yeah,
perfect.
Let's set them off in the cemetery and turn this into a seance.
Yeah, pretty much. I was like 17 and the tour was over. We broke down in Missouri and St. Louis and we're like, oh, we're not gonna make any of this.
In your opinion, is doing like a Christian tour worth it? Like, is there money there? Like, for those praise bands that, like,
yeah, man.
I don't know much about that world, but
absolutely. There's like a lot of like the Christian world is, you know, this whole other world of where you can make money playing music, and there's all sorts of different ways to make a living playing music in like the Christian world, because you have like youth, like, I mean, you have like youth pastor worship leaders, and you have like full church worship leaders, and then you have all the Christian artists, like the whole CCM world. It's a huge industry.
Wow.
And then the Christian music industry.
So how old were you when you were doing this tour?
17.
And this was just your high school band, and you guys got to go on tour?
Well, it was like we forced our way onto tour.
Okay.
It was like we...
You prayed your way onto tour.
Let's be honest. Lots of prayer. We didn't masturbate our way on the tour.
like us. We just slicked our way on the tour.
A lot of self-guilting my way onto tour.
Yeah, there you go. You know about this. And yeah, so we just pretty much like got like three or four youth groups to say we could play there, and didn't realize they were going to like do like full-blown like pass the hat for us. Yeah, but we took a Volkswagen bus and like this huge boat of a car. We called it the Hoopty. We took two cars, and the bus broke down, you know, 1,000 miles out in Jennings, Missouri. And we never made it to Cornerstone.
How'd you guys get home?
No, I made it to Cornerstone. Half of us made it to Cornerstone, and then we took the bus home and with this youth group. And that's where I learned that you can put a condom over your head and like put it right over your nose and then blow it up like really big.
You learned that at church camp.
Yeah, what kind of condoms?
I thought church.
Yeah, they're not supposed to give that shit out.
Yeah,
that's the reason it was so cool, man. These kids.
This is the coolest church ever.
It was the coolest church ever.
Me and my wife, when we're on vacation and rent a car, we find a Christian or we find a radio station. And we're like, is it Christian? Because she grew up with that, and I didn't. And she could just tell by the reverb on the vocals,
the production,
if it's Christian, because it's 10 years past when it's a viable art in the secular world. Mm-hmm. But there's this weird reverb on it too. There's this like Christly reverb.
I wonder if it's a plugin that's like actually made by Christians. That's that's called like the Halo or something.
The voice of God.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's. You're a little bit jesting, but you're mostly like correct. Like there's definitely like audible like production value
totally.
That you can hear, and I think it's like that, so they all sound the same on the radio, you know?
Right. So it's like a little like cue of like this is safe.
So you can identify and be like, I can listen.
Oh, good. Yes.
I mean,
the Lord approves of this.
I grew up in the middle of nowhere in Southwest Colorado, and so we would. I had horrible teeth, and my parents really wanted my like orthodontics thing to go well, so they would drive me 2 hours to the orthodontist, and then next to the orthodontist was the Christian music store, and I'd get to go to the Christian music store, and my mom would buy me. She told me she'd buy me any music I wanted as long as it was Christian, but I had to pay for any other music that I wanted to buy. Uh-huh. So I would just load her up. I was like, I don't even know what this shit is, but we're getting 16 CDs right now. And it was in the heyday of like Tooth and Nail and Solid State and
Nice
5 Minute Walk and, you know, a bunch of other like up and comer, Christian labels that had great distribution to all these Christian bookstores.
Yeah,
right.
That's pretty much how I like discovered. Weirdly, it's like how I discovered all my favorite music was like backwards through Christian bands.
Yep,
like you figure out what the secular band was, the secular equivalent or whatever.
Yeah, they would. They basically just be these like proxies for these like other non-Christian bands, and then you would discover that band because they sounded like this one Christian band, and it was awesome though. Like the whole thing was awesome. Like I didn't listen to lame Christian music. Like
sure.
I appalled. I was appalled by that shit. Like it was like there was real viable art happening in the Christian world at that time. It's still difficult to like convince people of that, but I'm convinced.
Sure. I definitely liked some of those Tooth and Nail bands, like Slick Shoes and Dog Light, like some of that pop punk shit.
And Dog Light and Craig's Brother. And
I was just thinking about like back in high school, like growing up playing in punk bands and stuff. Like we would play with Christian bands a lot, and it was a weird. Like I learned a lot because those bands had like real gear. Like so, I learned about pedals and amps and good stuff because they had money to buy all that shit. They had good drums and good gear. Yeah. Like, and we were playing through like, you know, crate solid state amps or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Just it's kind of a weird. We had like a weird mismatch.
We played a handful of shows where I call it the moment where you realize that you're like, oh shit, this is a Christian show, and you didn't realize it when you got booked, and you're like.
And it's then and then from then on you're kind of like a student of like what is this going to be like.
I remember the first time we were backstage, it was a punk show, and this band we were playing with prayed before they went on stage, and it was a punk show, and I was like, what the fuck is this shit? What are you guys doing?
I was like, we're just getting pumped up, bud.
Like, this is how we do it.
You're like, I know.
And
you want some blow or?
It's funny because I always wanted my band. I always wanted my bands to do that. But my little brother was the drummer in all our bands because there was nobody else to play drums in my small town.
That's how.
And he convinced the rest of the band that we weren't going to do that. Not going to pray. Just to like, just to get me. And so they would never do it, and I would get all pissed. And
your show goes bad, and you're like,
show goes bad.
Yeah, it's your fault.
Next thing you know, we're all in the gutter and like our lives are falling to pieces just because we didn't pray before the show.
Yeah, did that happen?
No, I mean that's what I was trying to convince them. It was like this, like our lives are going to go poorly if we don't do this. You know?
Yeah.
Like,
how'd you get arrested? if you want to,
I didn't get arrested. Two members got arrested. It was so stupid. I was just like, it's just like embarrassing because I. I just didn't know that if you get pulled over, that you don't have to let the cops search the car. Yeah. Like, I just didn't know
you
that.
I was
26.
Sure. Yeah.
And I just hadn't had any experiences with police, weirdly.
So you didn't know that you could say no.
I didn't know I could say no. And nobody in my band told me either, which I constantly go back to because this is brought up about like every year. And no one told me. We had a blinker out and we just drove with the blinker on because it was our tour van, James Brown, the hardest working van in show business. The blinker wouldn't, you know, it didn't show that it was not working, so it would just be on and tell. And so I just drove with my blinker on for like 5 miles. These cops trailed us, we saw them, we didn't, you know, do anything suspicious besides continue to drive with our blinker on. They eventually pulled us over, and you know, just one thing led to another. This is in Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Whiteside County.
It sounds like
it's a white side county.
Yeah, that sounds like a bad place to get pulled over.
Your blog that you create with all the beer laws and the weed laws, you should probably have some of these like weed traps too.
Sure,
like definitely like a weed trap. Like they just catch bands on their way to Chicago. Anyways, pulled us over and I said, yeah, you can search the car. We don't have anything to hide, knowing full well that like every single member had like weed in their backpack. They pulled us over, they separated us, you know, they asked us all questions, tore the van apart. These like six cars pulled up, and then they found two of the three stashes and, you know, arrested the two people that were it was our drummer and our multi-instrumentalist, and they took them to jail. And they were out. We had to just follow them there, and we busted them out. And you know, it was $1,000. Whoa. And we got him out in like 20 minutes and still made the show in Chicago.
I feel like
that's how you had to pay bill. But did they have to like report back on like a court date or something?
Yeah, I mean,
like
they
that?
Still had the they still had to deal with it afterwards. But the tour, actually, it was like we wasted like maybe an hour.
I feel like functionally, your band members got towed for parking illegally. Basically. And you had to pay for them to get out of the tow yard.
You know, that's I wish I had thought of that analogy because I think it was happening. Made everybody feel better.
Yeah, like, we're basically just getting impounded right now.
You guys got impounded. We'll get you out of the yard.
That's all that really happened. It's just so, it's
not that much more expensive than a tow. I guess tows are like $400 now or something like that. They're terrible, but
yeah, one of them wanted to get it out of his record, so he got a lawyer and flew out and got it. I think he got it off his record, and the other one just pled guilty, and it was still on his record.
Is that a Whiteside County attorney?
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Malcolmus. I don't know why I thought the day Malcolmus, attorney at law, Whiteside County, driving to Chicago, getting busted up on weed.
Oh yeah,
call Steve Malcolmus.
Call Steve Malcolmus. I don't know why that popped in my
Malcolmus and Malcolmus.
No. Just Malcolmus, the two Malcolmus brothers.
Now that's just be a small town county lawyer,
but even I can tell.
Yeah,
this boy right here.
I mean, that's you. You may have missed your calling, Ryan.
Yeah,
I'm definitely making Southern less lawyer. Money. I could have changed my name to Malcolmus and moved to Indiana.
Then you have to live there, though.
You have a totally different life than you have right now.
There's just a lot of.
It's not too late, Ryan.
There's a lot of communities that just make their money being predatory, you know.
And yeah, they got that quota.
Yeah,
it's fine. The people there need to like have.
Well, and shit like that falls under the money that you have to spend for your phantom band member, like the one extra member that doesn't exist.
Yep.
You know, that's the money you set aside to pay that person that they're. You know, yeah. Because shit like that happens.
Because that person sucks.
That's a great
and gets you
analogy.
Busted.
Yeah. I like that.
The phantom.
I wish you guys were in my band.
Yeah. The shitty. Yeah.
And we talked about this before, but we're
available, man. You can poach us right
I
now.
I tour in style.
Ryan could get you out of jail too.
I'm hearing robes. I'm hearing tour in style. Hearing successful small business in the fucking airport. We're in.
It sounds good.
Sounds like you like to be comfortable, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's what our band is called. It's just my name, but like our other name is the Comfy Boys. that's what we call it. The Comfy Boys.
Well, how long have you been robe centric?
My mother-in-law bought me this this cool robe that my wife informed me it was actually intended for women. I don't care. I love that robe, that robe.
It was like a joke gift or not? Or
no, she just liked it and thought Jared needs a robe, yeah. And probably just like I like this, Jared will like this.
I've never looked at somebody and just said, "You look like you need a robe."
You look like you could use a robe.
Well, I wanted a robe, and
if you're making it,
and I told her like I need a robe. My dad wore a robe, like. Most of my memories of my dad are either like
you're making
like,
me want a robe. I should
get, in should a, I get robe a robe or in like dirty like construction clothes. You know, it was like he had two outfits.
The original, the original comfy boy.
He was the original comfy boy. And yeah, he'd go out in the yard with his and change the sprinklers in his robe every morning. Oh. I don't know. It felt good to like have a robe, and it still does. And I did all my recording happens when I'm wearing the robe, and we do the vocal takes sans robe though, and it's great.
Go ahead.
Do you perform in the robe?
Have you purchased robes for you and the band to wear on stage?
I don't. I've looked into it, but it's all just seemed like too contrived, and it feels like it needs to be natural.
Sure.
I've definitely been gifted a new like sort of like muumuu like tunic dress thing that I wear on stage now instead of like my actual like mother-in-law robe. It'd be cool if we all wore robes.
I think so.
What about robes for
the band's maybe a little too cool for that though. I don't know.
What about like different robes for different situations? You know, you've got a robe for the studio, maybe it's got extra pockets for cables and stuff. You got a smoking robe, you got a robe for fixing the sprinkler.
That sounds great. I need three.
We get at least three more robes.
Yeah. Well, I have two. I have a stage robe and I have a house robe, so I need like a
you need
a true studio.
We need
robe.
A line of robes.
What? Yeah. That's actually not
what you
bad.
Need it's to do. Idea.
TLE robes for every occasion.
$80 robes and instead of like $15 t-shirt.
I'm thinking of a synergy. I'm thinking of businessy ways to parlay this robe conversation.
Shifting paradigms right now.
Because you could start a religion, which you are familiar with. Okay, so all of your money, and then call your religion Tender Loving Empire, mm-hmm. where everybody wears robes. Yep. That's part of the deal. And, and then you have a tax-free business.
Oh, yeah, yes,
and
yes.
Then, so then you have all your stores, and you wear all your robes.
And the robes are required for the followers of the religion.
Or if mm-hmm. you work in the stores.
Because they're sacred.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I really like this idea. And good. I need you guys to be at the meeting when we
I feel like if
when we pitch this.
When yeah. we join your band, we'll just gladly wear robes and not even question it, or we'll not question anything you have to say.
Okay,
we'll just blindly go along with everything.
That's good. I generally have...
You get 30% off your initial robe buy, though.
I generally have either really good ideas or really bad ideas, just so you know in advance what you're not questioning.
I wasn't going to question any of
that. That's the last info you get. It's all a guessing game from here on out. I like this idea. Now, I always wanted to to do something awesome and inspire people, you know? And it's like, I feel like inspiring people wear flowy outfits.
Yeah, be comfortable.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I have a robe that my mom gave me like 15 years ago, and it just got its first hole, and I'm bummed about it.
Yeah,
I was just like, what? No.
Yeah,
and I'm like, I guess I could sew it, but this thing just seems like it's dead now.
Is it a cooking hole? Is it an arm?
I honestly don't know where it came from. Huh. It's like a wool Pendleton awesome robe that I've worn like every day when I get up, and just this one day I noticed there's a hole in the pit, and it's it was a bit of like, I was like, man, I didn't think I actually had an attachment to this garment.
It had a nice run.
It had a great run, yeah. I have to ask my mom for another robe.
Pendleton wants to sponsor this podcast and get you a new robe.
That would be
that
great.
That would be not something we would not be...
Yeah, we'll take a new robe and $20,000. That'd be great, Pendleton.
I think y'all need to actually just have robes where you have the guest has one color, but then y'all have another mm-hmm. color.
That's a good idea.
Like a Starship Enterprise situation mm-hmm. where the captain wears this and the rest of the people
wear it. Like we're looking way too much like just normal Portland hipsters
now.
Yeah,
that's true.
I've never once had a robe. I want to try it. McMenamin's. McMenamin's tours. I've used a robe and because you have to get from your room to one of those down hallway
showers. They have to make it seem slightly like...
I gotta say, it's
kind of, for you.
It's kind of nice too.
I love those McMenamin's stories. Yeah.
I've got a McMenamin story for you.
All right,
yes,
do it.
I was there on the Great Northwest Music Tour.
Your robe fell off and your wiener flopped down.
Oh my God! You ruined my story.
No, that didn't
just
happen.
Just kidding. So I was like, oh yeah, I was there with my lady. I was like, it was my wife, but we were dating at the time, and I was like, oh, I got this sweet free hotel room. This is gonna be great.
Yeah,
playing at the thing and whatever. It's gonna. We have mm-hmm. our own room. But I'm going to try to get a shower before we go into the soaking pool, because you're supposed to do that.
Were you in Eugene?
No, nice. I was at either at Edgefield or Forest Grove. I can't remember the one. Maybe Forest Grove.
Yeah.
And there was a weird kind of curtained off area. I was like, this must be the shower. I was kind of drunk. So I hopped in it, and I was like, why is there coffee grounds in the shower? And I turn on the water, but it was like the kitchen composting sink that I had climbed into.
I was trying to clean
myself off.
You were so drunk.
Your eyes closed?
I'd had like three beers. I wasn't so drunk. I was just dumb.
You wandered into...
That is so not the thing I thought you were going to say.
You wandered into a room that was an industrial sink for food production?
It was just outside where you go to the tub, and it was curtained off in a way where I was like, oh, this must be the shower.
Oh, it wasn't in the hotel.
It was in the hotel hallway.
I don't know where you were.
But it was like on the way to the tub, and I was like, this must be the shower. So I pulled back the curtain and stepped in, and there was all this food waste.
You're like, wow, McMenamin's is a hippie hotel.
Yeah, really? Yeah,
I didn't know it was gonna be this bad.
It's a new thing. They've got the soaking pool, and then they've got the garbage room shower.
Yeah, it's all organic.
For like extra earth.
Compost your body.
Compost
for
your,
therapy.
Your dead skin cells.
You're like, stomp it. It's like,
did you, did
it's
your like mind, yeah, did your mind ever go into a zone where you're thinking like, oh, they're going to cook me next?
Yeah, guess what, man? Would have been better than the fucking hamburgers.
Oh! McMinimins, if you care to sponsor this podcast.
We just got unsponsored, motherfucker.
We've talked shit about McMinimins on other episodes as well.
It's a pretty fair
game.
Fix
your burgers, all right? Fix your burgers.
That's it. No, that's, the beer's fine. Fix the
fix your fucking service. Don't minimally staff that shit. It makes everybody mad. My favorite thing about playing Al's Den, if for people who don't live in Portland, is like music 7 days a week, and you play a 1 week residency, and it's work. It's a 3 hour chunk.
It's
and
a
you
work.
Go there every night. I saw your set there doing Nutrimilk Hotel.
Oh yes, nice. Loved it. Yeah. Yes, that was fun. The whole record.
But inevitably, so in the hallway behind it, there's a soaking pool, and so inevitably. Mm. Somebody three or four times during your set will walk down the hallway and open the door, and basically there's like a door right next to the stage. Uh-huh. So there's a fucking person wearing like a robe, like sopping wet, just like opening a door to a full bar staring at them.
Yeah.
And oh, that's weird.
And there's this there's this moment of like, should I walk through this bar and pretend that I'm doing this on purpose? Yeah. Or should I slink back and pretend and then go away slowly?
I did want to get another glass of Pinot Grigio.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that moment. So now, I always start my sets. I'm like, just wait. I want you
watch
all,
this door.
Watch this door, and when people fucking open it in robes, I want you all to fucking cheer.
Cheer.
Just
great.
Go crazy for
that's
them.
Great. That's so
I didn't
cool.
Have the wherewithal to think about that.
Also, watch this other door. Great. That's where the composting shower is. You'll find a confused ginger coming out of there.
I just mushed my legs all up in coffee grounds, so I'm ready for this show. It's soaking in, baby.
The more I sweat, the more caffeinated I become.
Yeah, baby. I got some activated crystals.
Okay, so let's get back on some touring.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I know what I wanted to ask. So on that tour that you were speaking of, Jared. That's a Gilgamesh classic lager.
Our beer sponsor.
This is an actual nice. Sponsor.
This toast, this clink. The silent
aluminum.
You can't hear it because these are 3.7 ounce cans.
our friends at Gilgamesh sponsor our life and podcast with beer, and so Gilgamesh Brewing, mad props, another successful Oregon business.
Absolutely,
fucking A.
Salem.
Thank
Oregon,
you
right?
very much, Gilgamesh.
Yeah. Okay, so what I was going to ask was, so on that tour, a couple of your bandmates got arrested. Was that the low point of the tour, or was there something else that comes to mind?
You know,
the
low point was in Baltimore after we played this awesome New York show, which was arguably the height of my music career. Okay. At CMJ, and you know, we had like my record was doing well at radio and the whole thing, and our drummer ran out of weed though, and didn't know where to get weed.
And that's the end of the story.
Yeah, we all killed ourselves.
It was a real low point.
I wish. He was one of the dudes who'd been arrested. So he was already kind of like harboring this resentment for me. And he stayed at a friend's house in Baltimore. And then he knew that we had like a 7 hour drive the next day and he had to be there at 10. And he shows up at like 11. And everybody's like kind of pissed. And we're like, man. And he just goes crazy.
And what's
on
his
me.
First and last name?
For the record,
this is difficult to not say.
I'm just kidding.
I'll let him be.
We'll call him Chet. Chet Malcolmus.
I still hang out with Chet Malcolmus all the time. This is water on the bridge. But he basically just like I was like, dude, you should have been here. Why weren't you here? And he goes, "Fuck you, Jared. Fuck you." Fuck you, Jared Meese. Fuck you. And just like, he said it over and over and just screamed at me. And I'm driving through Baltimore and I don't know what I'm doing. And James Brown, and we're just like, I'm just trying to get out of town. And he just won't let go. And Brianne's with me and Brianne starts crying because he's like, she's like, this like, I mean, he's like fully just
verbally
destroying me. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to drive. And so then I'm not an angry dude, but like, I basically just took his rage and went threw it back at him, and so we're like screaming at each other as we're driving down the road.
What's your, and everybody else
is just kind of like, I don't know what to do.
What do you say when you're really mad?
We just yell at each other and scream. And then it was somehow we went to his friend's house like an hour later and he got weed. I have no idea how that happened, but like he was smoking weed an hour later. Not of any of my doing. I would have never pulled over for him after that, but like somehow he convinced someone to pull over and like, oh, they fed us. That's what it was. We stopped for lunch and they fed us and we got weed.
I feel like we might have stoners in our band. And it is like a fucking superpower. How do they find weed? Totally. Like, it's like, how the fuck do you have weed again? Like, well, it's just some guy. I was just at the gas station and some guy looked like he might have had it. And then I just asked him and then he gave me some weed. I'm like, what the fuck? How did the... We were there for 30 seconds and
sometimes they don't even ask. They just have a tone of voice that they use. And someone's like, oh, you probably need this.
It's some law of attraction shit.
I think so, yeah. I think weed finds the right people.
I will have the weed. And then when they don't, when they don't have it, though, it just gets, you know, it gets... It was very difficult for him. And I felt bad for him. But
so
he does...
You ran out of weed and yelled at each other. So don't run out of weed on tour.
It sounds so dumb. But yeah, that's exactly...
No, I think it,
like, but that, and that was like that was the suckiest either, the suckiest part of the tour.
Either don't take people that have to have weed, or don't take weed, but definitely don't take people who have to have weed and then run out of weed.
You should have plants in the car in a tiny greenhouse in the back if you're gonna. You got to have something.
Might as well. I feel like
but then just don't go through Indiana.
Avoid white guy county.
I feel like the
county.
Cops just wouldn't even notice that. That's just like the foliage. They're just like pushing through that. It's like, no, I'm looking for like a backpack. It's
dirty.
Yeah. Right. On the ground.
Yeah. All these beautiful plants.
Oh, these are gorgeous plants. Where's the weed?
Anyway, do you have cocaine?
Yeah.
I've heard these anyway.
We broke down three times on that tour. We were in, you know, I got two colds. I lost my voice. It was just generally, it like really like when you got home, it was like that was amazing. But oh my god, I just didn't even really know how to be a normal person after it.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm sure y'all have like had even
100%.
Yeah, have had those experiences. But there was no safety net on the indie tours, and it's like a lot of our bands do on TLE. Like sometimes I feel like I'm signing people up for like suffering, you know, because it's like you're going to, you know, you're so excited. I'm going to like facilitate your suffering,
you know, and you have this knowledge that they don't have.
Yeah. Or they do have it, but they don't know how bad it can get because it's like, no, I'm going to make it where you can do this like for 8 months out of the year. Yeah. You can. And you're going to, and it's going to be insane, and you have no idea what's going to happen,
right?
You know, but then you know, would any of us have it any other way? Like, would we ever change one thing? Would you change one thing? Like, I wouldn't change anything. You know, I don't think any of our bands would change anything. So,
can you talk about a Punisher story without naming names? Obviously. That was like, I can't, fuck, this is really uncomfortable, or this is fucked up, or like, I gotta get out of here.
It has a happy ending. It started like that, but there's all these Jehovah's Witnesses that would come to our shows in California, and
wearing robes.
You know, kidding. Very normal Jehovah's Witness. We didn't even know they were Jehovah's Witness. We thought it was just like party, like happy people. And they were just like, it would just like surrounded us. They would surround us after the shows and just were so excited and just would talk and talk and talk and just buy drinks and just were so happy. Yeah. But then they were like, no, you got to come to the house. And like, we would go to the house and it was like, it was too much. But then they turned out to be really cool people, even though there was like this wild Jehovah's Witness discovery that we happened when we went to their house. It was like a whole like rack of books.
Did they drop it on you? Did they start to proselytize?
No.
Or you just like,
no, I mean, just they're cool. They're cool Jehovah's Witnesses. And they never really let on. It was just like, just was like this thing anyways. But then they were like, it was too much. And they would overwhelm you with their energy and overwhelm you with how passionate they were about your music and quote all all your music back to you.
Whoa.
That's the absolute
And had
worst.
All the lyrics, and it was like uncomfortable and difficult, but they were so nice. And then they forced me. And, they paid me all this money to fly down and like play at their daughter's wedding. Like,
oh, wow. You know,
and, yeah. Like, one of those.
Just, like, it was like all this, there was a lot of outpouring of like,
sure.
But yeah, it started out as this like very uncomfortable, like
sure.
pressure-y, like you're the only person to talk to and you love it. And you just spent like $300 like at the merch table.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I was not expecting like this, and I think that's the difficult thing is when people spend a lot of money at the merch table.
Yeah.
Then you like you kind of like you have to be part of their thing for a while.
Totally, totally.
If you're on, you know, depending on what level of a show you're playing.
Oh, shit,
sorry. And that's always an uncomfortable thing to be like.
It's strange because
going to leave now, and I you may want me to stay longer because you spent this amount of money, but it's
yeah.
I'm going to exit now, and I love you dearly, but
yeah. I always just say I have to go to the bathroom.
I must away.
And
yes,
that's a really nobody's going to be like, come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Just piss your pants.
I thought you guys partied.
Piss your pants, man, and then give me your pants. Like, it's all good.
And I'll bottle them.
I want to smell them.
Yeah.
Oh, they get all aggro. They're like, I paid $300 for your time. You're staying.
Last year, we were in Denver, Colorado, and I had a couple. I don't know what the right word is, but they basically said, like, this has never happened. This is not this kind of guy, but they're like, we'll pay you to come home and have sex with us.
Wow.
And I was just like, I
haven't heard that one yet.
I'm super, thank you so much. That's a big compliment.
And much money, first of all?
Details. They said, what would it take?
Whoa.
So it was kind of up to me to like, it was like one of
really?
Those.
Yeah,
and then like the husband.
These are your fans.
Yeah.
The husband was like, oh, she's kidding. And no, she was like, no, I'm not.
No, yeah. She was like, what would it take for you to come home and fuck us? And I was just like, what? And he's, she's like, she's kidding. And she's like, I'm not kidding. And I was like, wow. I don't want to fuck you guys.
Wow. Oh, thank guys, you so said that.
Yeah, yes, good.
You didn't just throw out like a high number. Like,
you should have said $20,000.
$5 million.
And then,
I don't know.
And I have like a three hour wife with my conversation.
Yeah.
A 3 hour conversation.
I have a 3 hour wife at that point.
Oh my God.
Yeah. For three more hours.
Listen, we can get all that student loan paid off. I would just close my eyes. I would hate it, but come on.
Yeah, baby, come on. We're talking about $750 here.
We're talking about $86 here. That's as high as I could think that I'm like, what, like $80, $90? What?
Yeah. I don't want to.
If you throw in a six pack, I think we're good to go.
Oh my God.
That's insane.
Yeah. It's never has happened before or whatever. It's weird.
I'm surprised actually that I wonder how many bands that happens to. I feel like
I'm sure that happens pretty often.
And I think they're very, very wasted, let's be clear.
Yeah, yeah. Naturally.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan, maybe you're not giving yourself
I mean they were blacked out. They're barely standing. They were actually laying on the floor.
They were stone cold sober. It was before the show.
It was actually on the street. They didn't know I was in a band.
Oh my God. Hey, you.
You.
What would it take?
For us to fuck you.
You were wearing a robe, weren't you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Giant.
You got a cheeseburger?
Wearing a robe, and he had just showered in the compost bin.
Giant boner. Giant robe boner. Oh, that's a good band name right there.
Giant robe boner.
Let's go. Well, gentlemen, we're looking pretty short on time here, but any other
beautiful.
Any like follow up questions?
I got a thing that I wrote down when I was Googling your name. Did you know that Jared Mees is also an American professional dirt track motorcycle racer?
Oh, awesome.
I just wonder. I absolutely do. And if he's listening, You need to send some emails back to me, bud. I'm getting tired of not getting my emails returned. I want to do a joint venture with you in some capacity wherein my music is on your videos. Perhaps I perform at one of your flat track motorcycle races, or perhaps you do some sort of like thing for my business. We're both semi-successful, and I think we could help each other out.
That would be an amazing clip.
I can't get a hold of this guy.
I closed my eyes and pictured you on a motorcycle with your robe dangling in the wind.
It would be
a mid-jump with robe.
Oh, yeah. Woo! The cross.
I mean, it's beautiful.
The cross branding.
There's so much there.
I mean, also,
in a music video of mine, like, that can happen.
If he did any of his promo motorcycle stuff. And you know how in music videos they used to do that thing where they'd have the little like box at the bottom right that showed you the name of the artist and stuff? He could put that in there, and then everybody would be like, this is Jared Mees?
Holy shit,
he sounds incredible. I didn't know he was so talented.
We could also just combine forces and be one dude.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
How much would it take to have sex with both of the Jared Meeses in one?
Yeah, right. Seriously. Seriously, we're never gonna know.
$750.
$750 going once. Yeah, I mean he's a killer racer. I mean, he wins all these races. He's number one. He has number one. Like, so his number is one.
You follow him.
in his mom's book.
I follow him. I send him emails. I'm not like stalking the dude, but I
you should fully stalk him.
The last 5 or 6 years, I've followed him, sent him a message. Hey man, how's it going? My name is Jared Mees. You may have heard of me because people probably hit you up all the time.
That's hilarious.
You're kind of tour punishing him.
You're
punishing
him. It didn't start out that way. And I don't want to overblow it here.
Wait, do people hit you up thinking you're him?
Yeah.
Does that happen?
It happens all the time to both of us, I'm sure.
Have a good week! Oh, doubled up!
Tour Punisher is recorded in beautiful, sunny Portland, Oregon at Open Signal with help from Stream PDX. Today's episode was produced by a well-earned candy bar, Noah Dunham, and dad for the world, Ryan Soley. Me, I'm Ray Rude. I'm fine. Special thanks to Jared Mees for being on. Please patronize jaredmees.pizza and buy stuff from Tender Loving Empire. That's tenderlovingempire.com. We are Tour Punisher on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to reach out to us, you can email us at tourpunisher@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and as always, have a good week, and we'll see you back here in 2 weeks.